The study that we're going to be using to talk about today is, again, Men Are Like Waffles, Women Are Like Spaghetti by Pastor Bill Farrell and his wife. I've led the Bible study a couple times in different life groups at our church. The study itself has turned out to be the funniest study that we've ever done. And you'll see, I mean, you'll be wiping a few tears away before the end of the day laughing. Okay, trust me, everybody does. But it turned out to be the most intimate study that we've ever done because it's so lighthearted, it's so non-threatening to guys, you know, because it talks about how you need to communicate with your spouse and how you need to meet her needs and vice versa. But a lot of times the guys get defensive, things like this. Does it in such a lighthearted way that, you know, guys just come alive and want to be there for their spouse. And that's kind of a little bit about what we're going to talk about. I'm going to leave some of the juicy tidbits out. The chapter on sex we're not going to cover. The chapter, you know, on parenting and things like that. That way, if you're interested in getting the study, you can do that with your spouse. I think it'll have a little bit more meaning for you if you do that with your spouse. But it talks about in the Bible how God wants us to use the differences to benefit our marriage. He designed the differences for that. He designed men and women different, but he designed them in his image. In Genesis 1, verses 26 and 27, if you want to open up your Bibles there, a little portion of that says, "Let us make man in our likeness. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them." Genesis chapter 1, 26 and 27. And God's original intention was to be like a starting point to build fulfilling, intimate relationships. That's what his mindset was. Okay. Well, that's what they're saying here. And I believe that. Okay. But as you know, the differences between men and women have turned out to be a great source of frustration. You know, with Adam and Eve kind of messing things up just a tad. You know, it's a little source of frustration. I don't know. Anybody here have a perfect marriage where, you know, the differences are just embraced wholeheartedly? Go ahead and raise your hand. Your wife says you do. Excellent. There you go. What she says, go. Well, you can actually leave then if you got it all wrapped up, brother. No, I'm kidding. No, you can come up and help me out. You know, no. I wish it was that easy to say, hey, yeah, our marriage is completely perfect. Because as you know, everyone struggles with different things in their marriage. And that's a little bit what we're going to address today. The universal frustration is that, you know, men process things one way and women process things another. Let me give you an example of how a dad feels towards his son. His son came home and said, Daddy, guess what? I got this really awesome part to play. I'm so excited. And his dad's like, well, what part did you get, son? And he goes, well, I got to be the part of the dad. And he thought for a little bit. He goes, son, proud of you, but tomorrow you need to go back to school and tell them that you want a speaking role. Okay? You get what I'm saying? I got a wife and three daughters, and it is almost impossible to get a word in edgewise. It really is. They're communicating, they're talking, they're speaking. Sometimes they're speaking to each other without even saying a word. They're just there, and I'm trying to keep up. It ain't happening. We're going to talk a little bit about that today. But even though, you know, we're a little frustrated with, you know, the way that women are sometimes, the way they communicate and how we just can't figure them out, we all have the desire to have meaningful relationships with the opposite sex, right? You know, we want to have great relationships with male and female friends. We want to have successful business relationships with male and females. We all want successful marriages that are happy and harmonious, right? We all have that desire. Even though it's a little frustrating at times, we still have that desire. That's why so many of our decisions are based upon how the opposite sex is going to respond. A lot of the things that we think about and what we say and do and decisions we make are based on how will my spouse or significant other, how will they respond to that? You know, and that takes up a lot of our thought process. You got to think, do you want relationship in your life that add value, or do you want relationship in your life that just make you totally exhausted? I don't want the exhausted one. I want ones that add value, whether it's my spouse or friends or my mom or my sister or whatever the case may be. And a place to start is understanding the unique differences that men and women, the different genders, bring to the table. And they're great, okay? They, you know, they complement one another. Because is anybody in here exactly like their spouse? Chances are probably not. Chances are opposite attract. Anybody in here opposites attract? That was me and my wife. We complemented one another. Now you may be asking, you know, how can men and women understand the differences between one another? And that's a little bit what we're going to talk about here. And in the study, what they talk about is men are like waffles, okay? And they're not talking about, you know, a guy waffles and he can't make a decision. No, they're talking about how men think of life in boxes. Men think of life in boxes. If you look down in your mind, picture a waffle right in front of you. If you picture that waffle, you got the different boxes, correct? And each box has little walls around it, right? Great for holding things, correct? That's how we as men think. It's great for putting, you know, one, you know, the first issue goes in this box. Next issue goes in here. It's great for holding one issue at a time. There's not 20 different issues in that one box. There's one box or one issue in that box. And what example of that is, When your dad or you are watching TV and your kids yell fire, "Dad, look at my project," or whatever, do you hear a word they're saying? You are in a trance. Is that correct? Your dad was in a trance when he was reading the paper. I was joking to my dad this morning. He was always the one reading the paper, and I would be screaming, yelling, just reading that paper in his box. You know, when you're out in the garage tinkering on your car, you think of nothing else, do you? But that beauty of that car and how you're going to... When you're out working on the yard, your personality goes into it. You know, when you're at work, you're focused on that work, especially if you feel you can be successful at something you're working on at work. We focus one thing at a time. It's called compartmentalizing is what scientists call it, where we put our different responsibilities and put life in different, you know, compartments. Well, as a result of that, men are problem solvers. You got any problem solvers in here? What do we do? We go into the box. Bam, here's the problem, right? You formulate a solution, and then you go for it, right? We size it up. Bam, here's how we fix it. Do women think like that? not even close, right? Anybody's wives think like that? You're blessed if they do, but I know mine sure doesn't. I know my daughters don't process life like that. Our careers are kind of the same thing. If we feel we can be successful in a certain, you know, aspect of our job, we feel like if we try really hard at this, we can be successful at it, we're going to pursue that box and probably put a lot of time into it. And a lot of times we're focused on that box. Man, I can be successful. This feels good. I like this. I'm succeeding here. I'm not feeling like a failure. I'm going to stay with that box quite a bit. And in communication, we go to that box, okay? We want to get in there, get the bottom line, and then get out as quickly as possible. You ever heard this in a conversation where you're starting to talk to your wife, and in your mind you're like this to her? Don't do that, but, you know, you're going like that to her? Yeah, not a good thing. We'll talk about that. But men, we strategically organize our lives in these boxes, and we tend to stay in these boxes that we feel like we can succeed in. And we tend to stay away from the boxes that we feel like we can't succeed in, right? I never go near a car. I know nothing about it. I feel totally inadequate when my buddies, my army buddies, are talking about, oh, I put this in my car and this and that, whatever. And I'm like, how about them Cubs? Woohoo! You know, because I know sports. I don't know cars. So I try and stay away from that. Here, my wife, here's the wrench. She likes, I mean, can anybody relate? That there are certain things you stay away from because you feel like you can't succeed in them. We're all the same. But see, the problem is, say we get wrapped up in a box like work, and it feels good because, man, we can succeed in this. We're getting rewarded. People are noticing. What tends to happen? What tends to happen to you? You don't open any other boxes. That's exactly right. And your priorities get a little messed up. That's called like your workaholics. You know, you get totally focused on, hey, this feels good, patting the ego a little bit, and you get focused in that box. And then, you know, your family life, whatever, struggles a little bit. But then you have the other extreme. You have some people that they feel they can't succeed in that work box. You know, they don't like going to work because they're not succeeding. It's not fulfilling to them. So they're content being in their lazy box because they know they can do that just as good tomorrow as they did today and yesterday. You know, they're content with being lazy. So there's a little bit of the extreme one way or the other. And guys, we kind of take the success approach to communication as well. If we feel we can succeed when we're talking to our spouse, if we feel the conversation is going to have a desirable outcome, we're in it, aren't we? We're talking about it. You were there for 45 minutes. If it's something that we're interested in, and if we feel there's going to be a desirable outcome, is that correct? All right, if we feel like there's no point to it, it's not going anywhere, it's her idea and not yours, what happens? What happens in you're laughing. What happens at your house?
You roll your eyes.
You roll your eyes. You're like, oh, is this going to go anywhere, you know? And that's why I said you ask your spouse, does this have a point? Is this conversation going anywhere? You know, you feel that, don't you? I've said it a time or two. And then I ducked, you know, and unfortunately I've said it to my little daughters before, you know, get to the point. I got a 5-year-old that takes 10 minutes to tell a 30-second story. We drive, as we're driving home from the school bus, it's like a 7-minute drive. And we ask each kid, how was your day? All right. We always start with the oldest, the middle one, a little longer, because that 5-year-old will talk the entire 6 minutes you give her, telling you about something that could have been said in 10 seconds because she's talking about every little different thing that went along with it. If you feel like you can't succeed in that box, you feel like a sense of failure, like, I want out of this conversation because I don't feel it's going anywhere that I desire. You know, it's a little frustrating. Now, we also have the success drive. That's why we pursue all these hobbies. If we feel we can be successful in a certain box, like sports, you know, or like I was talking about your yard or something like that, we go there because it makes us feel good. It makes us feel like we're somebody. All right, we're feeling validated because, you know, you just stuffed the guy when he shot the basketball, and you're like, oh, yeah, our team won, or like we were talking about you with your yard. We have that success drive. You know, we go to those boxes that we feel we can be successful in. But the bottom line is, you know, men are going to go feel best about themselves when they're problem solving, right? When we problem solve, we feel the best. When we're fixing it, you know, your wife comes to you and you're like, A is B, A is equal to C. So therefore, you know, you're just bam, bam, bam. It's black and white in a lot of cases. And to your spouse, it's every color intertwined, everything all together. Okay. But to us, here's what it is. We're going to get in there, problem solve, get on out. Honey, what else do you need me to do? I just solved all your problems in 10 seconds. That's how we process things, okay? Not exactly how women do. We process things in those success boxes because we know we can do it, because that's how God wired us. And we kind of ignore the things that we feel like we can't be successful in. And the problem with that is we're probably ignoring some pretty key things that we need to focus on in our marriage. Would you agree? Things that, oh, I don't want to talk about this, you know, whether it's finances or in the bedroom or how you never listen or how these, you know, your to-do list is like 4 pages. Anybody else's to-do list 4 pages? Please raise your hand so I don't feel all alone there. My wife reminds me, that's not a box that I'm comfortable in, you know. I can't fix stuff around the house. No clue. Every time I try to fix something, I break it even worse. So I just would rather pay somebody. She'd rather me, you know, fix that. So I don't go to that box because I feel like I can't succeed in it. Now, women, on the other hand, they're like a picture a plate of pasta, okay? In your mind, picture a plate of pasta. Make that pasta spaghetti. Now, look at all those noodles. Look at how they're all intertwined on that plate right there. Now, pick one noodle, follow it around a little bit, all right? See how it's touching all the other noodles, right? Oh, now guess what? You're probably actually following a different noodle and they'll even realize it seamlessly. That's how women process things. Everything is connected to everything else. Would you agree that's pretty accurate with your spouses? Everything is connected together, whether it's parenting, their friend relationships, your relationship, their relationship with God. Everything is intertwined, which is why women can multitask so well. You notice that? You know, your spouse can be on the phone. She's writing out a grocery list. She's disciplining the kids. She's cooking. She's doing all those things effortlessly, right? Without skipping a beat. She can focus on these different tasks because her mind allows her to connect everything all together. My wife is amazing about it. I mean, you know, she's doing the snap to the girls. She's making the grocery list. She's doing this with her foot, you know, to close something. I'm just like, how in the world? When I'm cooking, I'm standing right there in front of that stove. Egg, bam. You know what I mean? I'm just one thing at a time. She's all over the place, you know, dropping the egg in there, you know, going here, going there. I'm like, wow, I wish I could do that. It's amazing how I wish I could, but my mind just doesn't process like that. But see, women, all their thoughts and emotions and convictions are what keep them on track, is that everything's intertwined. When they converse with us, they want to link everything logically and relationally and spiritually and emotionally together. That's how they process life. They want to process those things with you, and that's why every little thing is intertwined. And the stress that comes up with that is that as she's connecting everything together in her life, she's connecting the friend relationships, the church relationships, cooking, you know, how her kids are feeling, this, that, or whatever. She's just doing it like this. And if she's talking to you, what are you doing? Man, you are flying from box to box to box to box to try and keep up, aren't you? You're jumping from here going, oh, man, slow down. I cannot, you know, process all this stuff. And example, here's how the conversation might go. You come home from work, your spouse goes, how was your day? You know, well, my day was fine. And then without you even asking, she's like, well, my day was great too, because at work they picked me to do a project. And I'm so glad that just because I'm a woman, you know, they didn't rule me out. You know, women have been fighting for, you know, equal representation for years. And I'm so glad that you treat the women at your job with respect. And your daughter's such a lucky daughter to have you as a dad. And remember, her game is on Friday. And we need to get to know Bethany's parents, because Bethany and Susie, you know, they're going to be pretty good friends. And you're just going, what? She asked about your day, and now she just intertwined all these things together. And you're feeling a little inadequate in the conversation because you just can't keep up, right? Anybody's wife like that? In one conversation, there's 10, 15 things brought up. And you're still focusing on what? How is your first thing you said or the first thing she said? Exactly. You're like, I just don't get this. You know, I didn't even ask. And she just kind of had to get it out of her system. Maybe she's been home with the kids all day and didn't have those adult words, didn't have the adult contact, adult conversation, which is why, guys, you should encourage your wives to have a lot of friends. Encourage her to call those friends regularly during the day. So when you come home, she doesn't have her, whatever it is, the little number, the 30,000 words to talk to you about, because if she does, we'll sit back and get comfortable. But if you encourage her to have those friends, she's getting a lot of those words out. So when you come home, you can, more manageable. We need about 15,000 or so. They need about 30, you know. So Encourage her to have friends. Okay. And when she's going through all that stuff, she feels better. She's getting it out of her system. Woo! We are so connected here. And you're just lost, frustrated. You had a terrible day at work. And you just, you know, wanted to say fine, so you didn't bring your work home. And now this is just dog piled on it. You know, she's just throwing all this stuff at you. You're trying to remember the game and what was a friend's name and when, you know, when am I supposed to be here and this, that, or whatever. And you're just getting totally overwhelmed. Men, there's a characteristic that men have in conversation that that causes women a little stress in the male and female relationship. And that would be that we have some boxes out there. They have no words in them. They have thoughts in them, but no words. And what I mean by that is you think of past experiences you've had. You think of your past and think of things at work or pleasant experiences that you've had. A lot of times you can't put those into words. Like when I went to Boy Scout camp with my dad every year, it was just awesome. I can't describe how good it felt to be hanging out with my dad. You know what I mean? It's a feeling that I have, a pleasant experience that I have that I just can't put into words to explain to my spouse. Now they don't quite, you know, women don't quite understand that. How can you not have any words in that box that you're in? Sorry, ladies, there's just boxes that I go to that have no thoughts. They're great experiences, but I can't put them into words for her. And so she kind of feels a little bit left out. But then it gets even better for the ladies because there's boxes, guys, that we go to that have no words and no thoughts in them. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Anybody ever felt that before? It's the nothing box. It's the box that is white as paper. It's empty. It's empty. And you go there and you park in that box when you're having a stressful day. And you're sitting there and you are just in a trance. And you are thinking of nothing. You ever had that? I do it all the time. Where I'm sitting there and all of a sudden I'm looking off in La La Land and I'm thinking of zilch. You ever had that happen? All the time. You know, and women cannot understand how in the world can you go to a box where there are no thoughts going on and no words going on because theirs is like this. We're just nice and comfy. We're feeling comfortable and safe in that box. We like it. But you know what's funny about that? Your spouse always seems to know when you're in that box, doesn't she? Because you get the question. You're sitting there all relaxed, you know, feet up in the trance. And she's looking at you going, look at how relaxed he is. He must want to talk. He must want to talk about me. He must be thinking about me. So what does she ask you? What are you thinking, dear? Right? And then all of a sudden, you are in a panic because you're thinking of nothing. And if you tell her that, what is she going to think? What are you lying about? What are you covering up? Your mind, what are you doing in your mind? You're jumping around, man. You're hopping boxes going, where are my words? Find me some words so you can at least bring up something. Would you agree? So then finally you come up with just something and you just kind of throw it out there and she buys it and you're like, dodge that bullet. You know, she feels a little fulfilled because you talked about, you know, something. Now, if you're slow to the punch and you can't think of anything, you're like, she's still thinking. What is he lying about? Why is he not telling me what it is he's thinking about? Who is he thinking about? Right? You ever had that happen? Your spouse like, well, what are you thinking about then? I'm not thinking about you. Oh, you're thinking about something. Who are you thinking about? I'm just like, I'm not. You know, I wish our wives could understand that we go to these places where there's nothing. And tell her, you know, dear, there's nothing. Nothing is wrong. Nothing is in denial. Nothing's being covered up. I'm just there. That's how I'm wired. I go to and they just can't imagine it because their mind is constantly going. Even when they're sleeping, I'm sure it goes 100 miles an hour. So we're pretty lucky as men being able to just think of that one thing at a time. Especially get to go to those success boxes when everything else is intertwined for them. You know, we're able to go and just park, and I like going there because my kids will be snapping in front of me, and I'm still in La La Land. After a while, I'll be like, oh, do you need something? And then I'm like, what was I just thinking about? Zilch. Absolutely nothing. It's a comfortable, safe box when you got a lot of stress going on. Have you ever had this conversation where you're talking to somebody and all of a sudden you pause for a second and you go, what were you just talking about? You ever said that? Or what did I just say? Where was I going with this? I don't remember. You know where I was going with this? You ever had that? You ever said that to somebody? Yep. Guess what happened? You were going from box to box, the word boxes, then all of a sudden in the middle of nowhere you hit the empty box and you just... What were we just talking about? It just happens. You know, he's laughing back there. It happens. You hit the empty box, and then you're just like, oh, man, what were we just talking about? You know, and then you feel stupid. I've had that happen at church. It's just, you know, part of life. Men and women, even though there's all, you know, this complications and things like that, you know, with the differences between men and women, we really do complete each other. what am I looking for? We complement, that's what I'm looking for. We complement each other very beautifully. If we have these healthy relationships, both people are going to feel a little bit more complete. Now, we're fascinated with the differences because women are completely different than us. And I'm sure they're probably fascinated with us because they're thinking 100 miles an hour about us. It's hard to adjust sometimes to the ways of our spouse. Would you agree? When you got married, was it exactly how you thought it was going to be, adjusting to your spouse? Was it exactly what you thought it was going to be? No, it was a huge adjustment, and it can be hard to adjust, you know, to what your spouse, what she brings to the table. It can also be humorous and enjoyable at the same exact time, if you allow it to be. You know, you're going to have those humorous and funny moments if you're not so wrapped up in, oh, I need to change her. You know, she needs to be like this, and this is what she, you know, portrayed when we were dating, and now she's totally different. Just realize she's different. God has destined her to be a certain way, and you need to let it happen. You don't try and change her. You let God change who she is. Now, let's talk a little bit about some differences between men and women. And I'm going to read just a couple of these. I got this Bible study right here, and we're going to refer to this quite a bit. Here's some of the differences we've noticed about men and women. Men are more aggressive than women when they drive sports cars and light trucks, but women are more aggressive when they're driving SUVs and luxury vehicles. I did not know that. Women are less likely to get caught and convicted of speeding than men. When men perform as well as they expected at a particular task, they tend to attribute their success to their own skill and intelligence, right? If they perform below their expectations, they tend to blame it on bad luck or some factor that is out of their control. Now, a woman, on the other hand, when women meet their low expectations, they tend to attribute it to their lack of ability or intelligence. When women exceed their low prediction for achievement, they tend to attribute it to good luck or some other factor beyond their control. Complete opposite of us is how women process things. Within relationships, women resolve the day-to-day issues while men settle life-changing disputes. That's pretty true in my household. My wife takes care of pretty much the day-to-day, and we'll contemplate and talk a little bit about the long-term stuff, but I make the final decision on that. It's just what we're comfortable with. Women ask more questions. More than 3/4 of interruptions in a conversation are made by men. You know why it probably is? He's flying through all kinds of things, and we're telling her, slow down, wait for her. Hey, what did you just say here? You're trying to track where she's going, and you're trying to tell her to slow down a little bit, I'm guessing would be the majority of why we're interrupting a little bit. Now, let's look at some fun questions. You'll get a kick out of these for married couples. True or false? A vacuum cleaner makes an excellent anniversary gift. The answer is true, provided you want it to be your last anniversary. That's awesome right there. When your wife says, let's not get each other Christmas presents this year, it indicates A, her desire to share with the less fortunate. Is that your wife? B, her thoughtful and realistic interest in the household budget. Maybe your wife. Or C, a test to see if you love her enough to forget the suggestion and surprise her with something you'll be paying off until Columbus Day. Who is more likely to utter the following? All right. What's for supper? Raise your hand if that's you or your spouse. Okay. Have you seen my socks? Raise your hand if that's you or your spouse. Okay. When are we leaving for church? You or your spouse. If it's you, raise your hand. Usually the spouse, okay. Do you think I've gained weight? Is that you or the spouse? Huh? Yeah, you know it's your spouse because guys would be like, oh, look at that. Bam, look at that gun. Woo, I bought and paid for it right there. All right, where's the television schedule? Raise your hand if that's you or your spouse. Is that you? Exactly. Okay, we tend to... When we need things, we throw in the conversation. We jump in there, hey, we need this, where's this, can you help me with that? We're willing to dab a little bit, but, you know, the relational things, not so much. Before answering this next question, how do you like my hairstyle, what should a husband always remember? A, his wife's feelings are the most important thing. B, she may have spent hours in a salon to get it to look that way. C, the couch is lumpy, and when you sleep on it, the spring's poking in the back. And here you go. You try on your high school jacket, and find you can no longer snap it up. What do you want your wife's best response to be? A, maybe it shrunk a little. Will that help you out? B, I like you a little less skinny. Or C, that jacket would look dumb in a bald guy anyway. All right, you lose either way with that one. Okay, let's say your spouse is snoring. You should A, accept it as a minor flaw in an otherwise perfect mate. B, gently nudge her and say, roll over, dear. Or C, put a pair of sweatpants over her head and tighten the drawstring. If a long-time married couple is in the bathtub together, it can only mean one thing. A, they still feel passionately about each other. B, their love life is spontaneous and exciting. Or C, he's grouting some loose tile while she tries to get rid of the stubborn soap scum. A husband offers to run the store for a quart of milk. Now, I want to see hands on this one. He most likely will return with A, a quart of milk. B, two steaks, a big fish, a bottle of ketchup, two bottles of pop, a box of donuts, a TV dinner, some cheese, the latest issue of the TV Guide, and a can of 40-weight motor oil. Or C, a day's expression, and the question, what was I supposed to get? You guys, the goal today would be that you would gain some insight into your spouse and develop some skills that make you feel, hey, I'm glad that men and women are different. We're going to just talk about a few things here today. The main one we're going to focus on is communication, because communication plays into all the other things that basically this chapter talks about, which are, real quick, I'll give them to you. It talks about men and women communicating together, relaxing together, men and women in love, men and women in the bedroom, okay, men and women in conflict, men and women achieving together, men and women at home, men and women as parents, and men and women meeting each other's key needs. The Bible study, like I said, has been a great tool that I've been able to witness to different couples. We have a couple in our study right now that they went to two Christian marriage counselors in 12 years. And they've stated that this study has changed their marriage more than any Christian counseling study that they've ever been to. They come and they are so eager to learn and listen because it gets you thinking outside of your box. It helps you understand the way your wife processes things. It helps her to understand the way you process things in each of the different areas. In the bedroom, in love, in parenting together, in achieving together, in conflict, in communication. You're able to understand the ways ladies communicate. This study changed my marriage, and it changed my relationship with my daughters and how they communicate. I thought being the military guy, my way or the highway, I said this. Now I understand that they've got to get those words out just like my wife does. And that's what we're going to get ready to talk about next is communication. When men start a conversation, they're probably... you're getting into it to address some sort of need, or I'm sorry, some sort of problem that you think is out there. Would that be correct? That's usually why you get into a conversation, because you feel there's something that needs to be addressed, something you need to solve. If there's no problem, then you don't talk. You know, you feel everything's fine with the relationship, right? If you and your wife haven't communicated for a while, you know, a couple days, whatever, you're still feeling fine about the marriage, aren't you? That's the way I am. Now, your wife, on the other hand, feels like your marriage is getting ready to fall apart tomorrow. Because you're not communicating with her. You're not sharing those things with her. She's just, it's bottling up inside of her. And she thinks, what's wrong? How come he's not sharing his life with me? And you're just perfectly content to sit back and kind of do your own thing and not talk a lot. They have a constant desire to communicate. So when they enter into a conversation, it's to connect everything, intertwine everything all together. She needs that connectiveness in her life. All right? Does she need you to fix things? Yes or no? No. When she's getting ready to, you know, come to you and start talking to you, what is your first instinct? You'll want to fix it. Exactly. She wants to connect and tell about this and everything all together, and you want to get in there and fix it because you've got something else you got to go do. But she wants to share her life with you. And what happens when you try and fix and make it a quick conversation when she wants to have a nice, drawn-out, regular conversation with you? Hurt feelings, right? You don't understand me. You ever hear that before? Do you even love me anymore? It's like, oh, come on. I got the answer to your problem. And here's a little secret, guys. Chances are she already knows the answer to her problem. The problem that she has or that she's coming to you with, chances are she already knows it. She just wants someone to talk to hear about it, correct? In most cases, they already know what's rolling, you know, and know how to fix it. But they're like, well, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about this and on and on. And you're at the end of the conversation, you're like, wait a second. You already knew the answer. Why do you even ask me? Well, I just want to talk to you a little bit. That's, you know, a little bit how women are, all right? Now, what happens is, you know, she gets hurt. You know, you're impatient because there's not getting to the point, okay? What started out as a hopeful, maybe, interaction between one another feels like another defeat. You ever had that in your marriage where you try and communicate about something and all of a sudden you feel like, why do we even try? You know, you feel defeated because she was all hopeful, you know, and you're like, oh, and she's frustrated, and you're frustrated because she's not getting the point. She's frustrated because you're not listening, and so on and so forth. Yeah, and a lot of conversations go that way. It's pretty unfortunate. How can men and women make communication work for them in their marriage? An important skill that you can do is taking turns. What do I mean by that? Taking turns. Taking turns in communicating. Okay, listening. Okay. Okay, talking stick. When I'm holding the talking stick or whatever, okay, whatever works. Here's a good rule of thumb. Whoever starts the conversation, and a lot of times it's going to be the woman, you should allow them to set the pace and establish those game rules beforehand with your spouse. If I start the conversation, here's where I want to go, and that's it. I want to talk about finances. Guess what? What do you want to talk about? Finances, that's done. You don't want to talk about everything else that's attached to those finances and, you know, what goes into this decision, that decision, right? Now, in her case, if she begins the conversation, you should let her take the conversation, you know, where she wants to go. Because, again, she feels the need to connect. She doesn't want you to fix things, and you need to allow her to go on the journey. And what I mean by that is you need to tell her, hey, take this conversation wherever you want it to go. I'm here. I'm willing to listen. All right? And some of your faces, you're like, are you kidding? She will talk forever. You ever felt like that with your spouse? You're like, she will talk forever. And you know what? The truth is, guys, she's not going to talk forever. Eventually, she's going to talk her way through things. She's going to find the answer. Everything's going to be all connected and fine. Conversation's over. The key is, a lot of men don't know. They didn't know that because they've never taken their wife to the end of that conversation. They've never helped her get there to that end of that conversation. Would you agree? I know I sure didn't when I was first married. I never helped her get to that point. It was always, I'm going to fix it and we're done. I'm going to go do my other thing. She needs you to listen. So that way, you know, you need to help her to get to the end of that conversation. Because a lot of you probably haven't. I know for the longest time, I didn't. I didn't want to get to the end because I was afraid it would last for 10 hours. Who's ever had that little marathon chat? Many, many times. And you're going, does this ever end? And then as you start getting a little bit more connected, then she doesn't have to say so much for you to actually get what she's talking about. And the conversation gets a little shorter and shorter. But as you take her to that conversation to the end, she's going to feel more closer and connected to you. And it's going to benefit you in many other different ways. And with women, one thing you got to realize is that each issue has its own emotion. You ever notice how your spouse in a conversation goes through a million different emotions in one conversation? Right? She's happy and then sad and, oh, scared and, oh, afraid of what they're... It's like, wow. But you got to think, they're connecting everything all together. They're connecting that fight they just had with their friend about with what their other friends are going to think and what she has to do tomorrow. And it's got its own little emotion attached where we can just go into one box and bam, here's that one emotion for that one box. Sweet and bundle wrap, just like that. Here, I'm going to be happy in this box. I'm going to be a little bit nervous in this box. You know, I'm going to be sad in this box. We know the emotion we're going to have when we're in that box. Hers are everything's all together. And if we're helping her get to that journey, to that end point, you know, she's going to not have such anxiety when she gets there because she feels the stress. She feels the stress if, you know, all these things aren't intertwined like she wants them to be. If her stars aren't aligned, she feels that nervousness. But see, what happens to us when she's going on and on about all these different things and we can't keep up? What do you feel like? Feel a little like a little powerless, right? Because she's going all over the place and you're like, she doesn't want me to solve anything, but boy, I got an answer for this. You feel a little bit powerless and you're like, well, let's just get out of the conversation because I don't like how this feels. That's not what she needs from you, but that may be what you need. You know, hey, I just don't get where we're going here. I'm lost. I'm going to say the wrong thing. I'm getting frustrated. You know, you got to take her to the end of that journey. Now, another thing, too, is just because you maybe can't keep up with the conversation that she's trying to have with you doesn't mean that your way is the right way. Because that was always my thing. I got the problem solved. Why are we even talking about this? You ever felt like that before? It doesn't mean that your way is the right way just because you can't keep up with the conversation. Just sit back and relax and listen. Let her take it where she needs it to go. And when she does, at the very end, what are you going to hear? You understand me so well, right? You know me better than anybody else. You know, you just sat here and listened, you know, as your ears are bleeding. You're like, oh, I love you so much. You know, you're my best friend, dear. You know, she's telling you, right? Now, go ahead.
Well, you're calling it a conversation, but it's all been one-sided so far.
Exactly, because you'll notice that the main focus of a conversation should be listening. That's the main thing you do during a conversation, if you're a guy. It's supposed to be if you're a woman, but a lot of times ladies aren't the best communicators. The best communicators out there are the ones that are the best listeners, and we'll focus on that here in a little bit. You got to be a great listener, but we're not, guys, are we? We're not the best listeners. Someone could be telling us the exact right answer that we need to do something. No, I got this. I'll figure it out. They're telling you how to do it. No, I got it. I'm tracking. I'm almost there, right? If we just would listen a little bit, and this is, you know, I'm just saying generally, some guys are great listeners, and some guys have a little bit of spaghetti and waffle and so on and so forth, but this book hits me to a T. You know, I am definitely a waffle, okay? And again, guys, if you take your wife to that point where she's able to finish her conversations, you serve that need that she has, you're going to be married to a much happier woman. Would you agree? If you listen to her and take her to those emotional places that she needs to go, even if they don't feel comfortable to you, you are going to be married, serve that need, you are going to be married to a much, much happier woman who's going to be there even more so in the pursuits that you have. She's going to want to feel that connectedness to you and go golfing and drive your golf cart for you or what, you know, when in the past she never would because you were there for her. She feels that bondness, that connectiveness to you now. When the more you do that, the more benefit that that you're going to have. One complaint that men often have is conversation. It just seems like it's pointless. You know, I feel like I can't succeed in that conversation, in that box. I want to get out of it. You know, and so when she's going on and on, I just feel frustrated. So that's where, you know, the husband and wife really need to communicate with each other and tell them, you know, hey, when you're go on and on about different things, I get frustrated. Is there a key word that we can use that, you know, helps you know that I'm getting frustrated here? I'm in a panic and not tracking where you're going, or vice versa. Okay. You got to communicate. I mean, that's the key thing. You got to communicate if you're going to parent, if you're going to be, you know, in love together, achieving together, different things like that. You got to communicate. Let's look at a perspective for you. Let's say some of you in the room are those that stop the conversation off. You're at that point right now. You haven't quite figured it out yet, which is how I was for many years. Think of it like this. Think of everything in your life getting cut off about halfway through. Say you're in the middle of every meal. You know, you got that great steak for supper, you know, that Omaha steak. You know, you're at IHOP for breakfast, and your plate is taken away halfway through. You're here at the retreat today at noon. You're eating your lunch. And halfway through, you go, man, this is some good food. They just come and take it from you. How do you feel about that? All right, say you're watching TV. All right, and every sporting event that you watch on TV, your stupid TV shuts off 2 minutes before the end of the big game. Every game just keeps doing it. All right, think about that, okay? Or every project you start. But halfway through, you're getting it. Man, I feel good. I'm succeeding, working on this. Woo-hoo, I feel great. Bam, it's taken away. You're not able to finish it for whatever reason. Over and over and over that happens. Or during sex. All right, you're going, all of a sudden, halfway, you're not able to go to climax. Think about that. How does that make you feel if everything is getting cut off halfway? Irritable, right? Frustrated? What is that? That was me, okay? You know, that's how your wife feels if you're cutting off the conversation. Not saying you are. Some of you are probably doing a great job with your spouse. But if you're cutting off that conversation, not allowing her to go where it needs to go, that's how she feels in your guys' communication process. That everything's getting cut short because all those things that you were talking about that you enjoy, that you feel success in, the TV, the projects, whatever, that's the same for her when she's putting all those things together. And when she's not able to put all those things together, it's cut short. She's feeling the same thing you were, the frustration, the irritation, things like that. Now, what we need our wives to understand is that we need them to stay in one box at a time. Would you agree? Because what happens, we go in, we want to solve. Now, when we bring up the conversation and we're focused on this one box, she wants to do what? Well, what about this box that touches this one? And what about this one and this one? All these other things intertwine, right? And then she takes the conversation somewhere else. And now you're frustrated. The roles are turned a little bit. You're frustrated. That's where you need to communicate with your spouse and say, listen, when I want to talk about this one thing, please, I just want to talk about this one thing. My mind is wrapped around this one thing right now. I don't want to talk about all the other things. The emotional things are all connected. That'll come in a different conversation. But you need to have that conversation with your wife that, hey, if I'm coming to you with something, unless I tell you, I just want to focus on this one thing. Because what happens? You get frustrated in that conversation. You do what? You go to the nothing box if you can. Probably don't want to do that too close to your spouse. Middle of a conversation, she's calling your name. You're just up. That probably wouldn't be a good thing, huh? But yeah, you know, you don't want her to open any other box. And see, for years, she's going, why does this always backfire when I want to communicate with him about something? When he brings up an issue to me and I want to talk about it, she doesn't understand why. Because you want to focus on the one thing. You need to communicate that to her that, dear, I just want to focus on this one thing. And use the box and waffle analogy, or the spaghetti and waffle analogy. It'll definitely help you out when you're talking to her about the different things. But she doesn't understand why communication keeps breaking down on her end as well, is because she's trying to take it somewhere she wants it to go instead of you. That's why I said at the very beginning of the communication one, set some ground rules of whoever initiates the conversation should be the one to take it where it goes. So if you want to come to talk about finances, that's it. She's fine with that. If she brings something up, sit back, relax, and get comfortable, okay? Because what happens when she brings up too many boxes? You know, she's jumping here, she's doing this, now two things, now three things, on and on and on. What do you feel like? Yeah, she's lost you. Your train of thought is with that one thing you were thinking about. You do the shutdown mechanism, or you get angry. You know, I used to do a little bit of each. You know, I shut down and, fine, I'm just not going to talk. Whatever, give her a little cold shoulder. Anybody ever done the cold shoulder? Yeah, that don't work too long, but I've tried it a couple times, okay? Or you get angry, and what are you doing when you get angry? You're throwing out accusations back at her, because what's happening in your mind? You feel like you can't succeed in the box. You're trying to protect yourself is what you're doing because you're feeling inadequate because you can't. So you're yelling out, you're stomping out, you're leaving, I'm out of here. I don't want to talk to you anymore. on and on because you're trying to protect yourself because you don't like how it feels. That's why you need to communicate that with your spouse so that way, you know, it doesn't get to that point, because that's how it was when we were first married. Everything was back and forth because I want it this way, but we didn't understand that. And this definitely would have been nice. Instead of listening, a lot of times we try and change who the other person is. Instead of taking turns and listening what the other person has to say, she tries and knocks down those walls for you, doesn't she? And sometimes you try and cut her spaghetti into little squares, right, to fit inside your boxes. And it just doesn't work. You know, you got to have that open flow of communication. But, you know, whoever initiates, you know, I think it would definitely help you out. Now, what kind of listening do you need to have that will best build up a strong marriage? What kind of listening do you need to have? Active listening is good. Yep.
Non-judgmental
is another good one. Let me write some of these down. What do we say? Non-judgmental. Active. Awake. That's always a plus. Oh, man. Yeah. Never have a conversation late at night in your bed. What else? What other kind of listening? Supportive. Say again. Oh, there's a good one. Patient. A lot of times not the best at that. Focused. Exactly right. Focused on what she has to say. Yeah, I've tried that many times. Yeah. You just keep saying, you know, you're watching the sporting event over her shoulder. Who's ever done that? Raise your hand. I'm not alone, right? She's talking. You're like, yeah, baby, I got you. I hear you. Keep talking. Put your shoulder down a little bit. Yeah, that doesn't go so well. Doesn't know.
My wife hates restaurants and bars that have TVs in
it. Oh, yeah. You know what? Restaurants and bars that have TVs. When we go any restaurant, you know what my wife does? She looks around and she puts her face, she sits to where she can see, making sure there's a table, whatever table we're at, where I can't see. Because I can't help it. Boy, all of a sudden, oh, and he's going, and I'm there. Boy, I'm there for 20 minutes. You know, I'm stuck because I want to, and she's sitting there, we came to a date, you know, and you're not focused on me and upset. And yeah, it just doesn't always work the way that you want it to. To understand the kind of listening that you need to have in communicating with your spouse, you need to understand the different levels of communication. You've got, small talk, which is kind of like your what? How was your day? I'm going to the store. Do you need anything? You know, nothing too emotional, right? What's the next level of communication? It's where they share their thoughts and opinions. You know, it's where they're asking, do you need anything from the store? You know, I need your thought and opinion. What dress should I wear? Things like that. A little bit more to it, maybe a little bit more emotional, not a ton. This is where a lot of people get trapped a little bit. They get caught up in because they spend just a ton of energy trying to test the commitment of the relationship. You know, here, what's your favorite color? You know, you're asking her after 10 years, how does he not know my favorite color? You're frustrated because why don't you ever wear something that I like? You're just the little petty things. You're spending too much emotional energy focused on these little things right here and not getting to that true intimacy. That's where a lot of couples fall short, because they're just focused on that and then they get frustrated and kind of give up. Now, this third one, if you can get to it, this is the conviction in opinion. This is where your spiritual convictions, your morals, you know, this is where you talk about those different things. Now, if your communication, if you're at opposite ends of this part right here, you're going to have some problems. If you differ on how the role God's going to play in your life, it's going to be a problem. Would you agree? If you differ on your morals, definitely going to be a problem. You know, she's a part of you, you're not, you're a part of her, she's not. I mean, it's going to cause some problems. If you're differing on parenting and disciplining, we've had the struggle with, you know, with my wife and I with spanking and timeouts and things like that, you know, on different sides of the spectrum there. You're going to have issues. There's always going to be conflict in your life if you're at odds on these key spiritual and moral issues. Would you agree? This part, a lot of couples don't get to this part, this level of communication, emotional intimacy. You know, life's going to require you to communicate at the first three levels. You are only going to get to the fourth level if you choose to in your marriage. That's where you get to learn things about your spouse that no one else gets to learn about. You get to see things about your spouse that no one else gets to see. This is a level where you share your dreams and your fantasies, you know, and your fears and things like that. But you only get to that level if you choose to go there. And if you're adequately meeting them at this level, is how you're going to get to that level. But you got to choose to go there. Have you asked your wife lately, what are your dreams? Have your goals changed in life? You know, what are your dreams and aspirations? Have you ever asked her that? What are some of your fears that you have? Have you ever had that conversation, or just assume, oh, there's, no, you know, she doesn't fear anything. She probably doesn't have a lot of goals. Do you take your spouse to that level? Through the listening, you know, hey, tell me some of your dreams, and then just shut up and listen, right? tell me what some of your fears are. What are you afraid of? For years, I never did any of that stuff. I'm like, what? Dreams, fears, you know. Sure, I was all over the fantasy part, right? You know, we were newly married. You know, that's kind of where our thought process is. But they needed us at the other level, or the other places in that emotional intimacy as well. And I wasn't taking her there because we weren't really communicating about these different things. I was in my boxes, and I was fine. I was happy. I was sufficient in it, okay? Encouraging words. What are some of the encouraging words you've used on with your spouse that, matter of fact, we're going to have not each, but come up, and I want you to write a word that you've said to your spouse or phrase that completely just met her where she was at. We'll take a second here. Throughout your marriage, what is a word or phrase? That way, in case it's something you came up with that was really creative, you know, someone else can write it down and use it in their marriage. What is an encouraging word that you've used in your marriage? Think real quick. When I said that, the dynamics of our relationship changed. I'm here for you. You know, I'm feeling where she was at. I'm here for you. She was sharing her heart with me, and it was something you're struggling, and I didn't know what else to say. I didn't know how to solve the problem at the time, and I was just like, I'm here for you, meaning I have no clue what I'm supposed to say, but I want you to know I'm here for you. Keep talking. That was kind of where I was going with that. What are some other words or phrases that you've ever used? Anybody want to come up and write something down? Anyone? I'll write it down. Wonderful. Okay. Is a word you use? Proud of you. You said that? No, I'm kidding, man. I'm messing with you. All right. I agree with you. What else? What other words of encouragement have you used for your spouse that really reached her where she was at? Really?
Because before, I can't think of the guy who's on KVOR. He said the worst thing you can say is that because how'd you look before that? You looked at
others. Oh, yeah.
You do. Don't tell your wife she looks nice. Her hair looks nice.
Her hair looks nice. And she'd be like, what, you didn't like it before?
Holy
yeah, yeah. Well, we'll cover some of those funny reasons why it's good to be a guy here in a second. Ooh, there's a good one. Still glad today that I married you. Do it over again. Ooh, that's a good one. I'm going to call my wife on the drive home and use that one. She's like, oh, he learned something in men's retreat. Praise Jesus. An encouraging word. Now, they share a story in the Bible study about how the pastor's wife had, when they were first married, had gotten out of the shower. And he was her choice. You know, you're beautiful. I pick you. God, you know, bless me with you. And she was criticizing her body. And he got frustrated with that because he felt like she was criticizing his judgment. And two, you know, he thought she was gorgeous and didn't, you know, what are you talking about? And so what he did, which I thought was great, and I did it for my wife because she just struggles with that too. I think my wife's smoking hot and she just has, you know, issues with how she looks. She always has her whole life. But basically what he said is he wrapped his arm around her, okay, held her tight, looked into her eyes and said, listen, let me be your mirror. Let me be your mirror. When you think you're not beautiful, I want you to know you are beautiful. You are perfect. You are what God destined for me. I think you're gorgeous. And if you think otherwise, come to me and let me be your mirror. And he said, I'll break every mirror, throw them all away. You let my eyes be your mirror. Because the world, guys, you know, society, I mean, look at all the marketing. You know, what are they? You see 180,000 beer commercials by the time you're 18 or something like that. I mean, just, you know, and think of some of the women that are on beer commercials and things like that. Women are told, if you don't look like this, you know, you're not beautiful. They're beaten down each and every day from when they're little girls. And we're trying to get ahead of that with our three little daughters. But would you agree? The world's telling them, you have to, you know, to be beautiful, you have to look like this and so on and so forth. It's tough. You know, us guys, I mean, who cares what people think? You know what I mean? We don't even wear matching clothes most of the time. You know, where the ladies, they, you know, that's really important to who they are emotionally and everything intertwined. So the world's throwing arrows at her each and every day, and they're trying to close her spirit by telling her she's not pretty, she doesn't have value, she's not beautiful, she's not enough. You know, if she's a stay-at-home mom, she's not somebody because she doesn't have, whatever. You know, so you got to get in there. When they're trying to close her spirit, you got to get in there because the devil wants to close that spirit up. Close up to God or close up to you. You got to get in there. And let me ask you, how many arrows have you taken for your wife this last week? Or are you standing aside letting the arrows fly, or are you flinging arrows right at her? You got to think about that. Is she on her own or are you her shield? Are you standing up there and saying, I'm going to take these heat rounds for you? Okay? You need to, you know, take some arrows for your spouse because they really care. They value your opinion more than anybody else on this earth. They value what you think. And are you validating who they are and the beauty that they have? Or are you just not saying anything? Oh, she knows that she's beautiful. She needs to hear that she's beautiful from you. You need to give her those encouraging words, things like this. I'm proud of you. You're special. You're somebody. You know, great job. You know, whatever, even if it's the smallest thing. I got a thing above my telephone at work. 50 ways to praise a child. It works for my spouse, too. So when I'm talking to them on the phone, when I'm making phone calls late at night as a National Guard recruiter, I'll say, you know, I can't think of all that stuff, but it's right there, 50 of them, and I'll use different ones with my children. You should just hear my daughters come alive as I say, you know, you're unique or you're very talented or whatever, or you say different things to my spouse. Well, the other day, my spouse found the photocopy thing I had in my briefcase. She's like, wait a second. I'm like, hey, I can't come up with this stuff on my own. Seriously, ask her. About 2 days ago, she found that sucker. And so I've been using it. I apologize, but it works for my kids. So I was busted, but it does. Those encouraging words, you know, you're special. Oh, you did a great job. You know, just little things like that. They like to hear it. And they especially like to hear it for no reason, right? They love that kind of stuff, okay? And experience has taught that happiness and passion in a marriage doesn't come from finding the right spouse, guys. You've heard this before. It comes from being the right spouse. It doesn't come from finding the right spouse. It comes from being the right spouse. You change your heart. You allow God to change your heart. You don't worry about your spouse. You know, oh, she needs to change. She needs to be like this. God's going to do a work in her. You're not going to be able to change her. You need to change the things that you do, things that you say and do. Unless you're doing them completely fine, great. Continue on with what you're doing. But there's things you need to work on. You have God change you. You be the right spouse to your spouse. Don't keep trying to change who she is. Change your heart and say, okay, God, she has these qualities for a certain reason. You know, I don't understand them, but I'm going to try and embrace them as best I can. And let him work on her heart. Don't be the one that tries to change her, because it's just going to be conflict. You ever tried to change your spouse? Yeah, it doesn't quite work, does it? No. You go into a marriage, you know, hoping that she doesn't change, and what happens? Maybe physically, you know, she does change a little bit. She goes into marriage trying to change you, and what happens? You don't. Do you change? No. You're probably the same, you know, as you were back at age 18 before you were married. All right, look at your hand out there on communicating. Some of the questions are for you to do with your spouse. When have you said something that you shouldn't have and then regretted it? Have you asked the person that you hurt or disrespected for forgiveness? And if so, why not? If not, why not? You know, choose a phrase that you like to, like, out of your vocabulary and put it in a place in a new phrase that is more positive and encouraging. Do you speak the truth in love to your spouse? Ephesians 4:15. Do you honestly do that for your spouse? Think about that. In the last couple weeks, have you spoke the truth in love to your spouse? Have you sugarcoated it? You know, have you just beat her with it? Or have you spoke the truth in love, okay, to your spouse? And then there's some questions that you can ask your spouse when you get home, okay? And I didn't go over the blue one yet, but relaxing. Who enjoys relaxing a little bit? Anybody? Hopefully. When was the last time you sat back and relaxed with your spouse a little bit? When was the last time you did something together just to relax? Honey, we've earned a break. Hey, smart man. It was scheduled. Because, you know, here's what I'm saying is, guys, stress hits women different than it hits us. It hits us, bam, we're beating it up. We're trying to solve it to get through it. She's processing everything that goes along with that stress, right? So it affects her, you know, physiologically different than us. Women's, you know, they have higher levels of serotonin. So they're going to, you know, they hit depression a lot more than we do. You know, that's just how they're wired. And women, guys, they have to talk to get out of their stress, get out of their fog. When they're in that foggy weather and can't get out of it, it's probably because she's not communicating or not communicating in a way she needs. Maybe she's communicating to the kid, but no one's hearing who she is and what she's struggling with. She has to speak to get out of her stress. We have to fix it to get out of ours, but she's got to communicate for her to be able to process things and work through that stress. She's got to be able to talk. And so if you're taking her there, you are a blessed man, okay? Now, what we've done for our women is the easy boxes that we have to relieve stress, pretty simple. Most of them are shaped like a box. Newspaper, TV, football field, basketball court, right? What's our favorite box that we like to go to when we want to unwind? Okay, TV. Box that doesn't have the empty box, the nothing box. I went there, what, 5 minutes ago? I totally lost where I was going. Exactly. My favorite box would be the box that's shaped like a bed. Oh, wait, it is the bed. Right? Because my two favorite activities are done there. Sleeping and sex. My two favorite things that I like to do to relax and unwind. Think of if your life was like a bingo card. Okay, this is how guys process things. Think of your life as like a bingo card. All right, you got all the little pieces there. What's the big free space in the middle? What do you think box that's going to be? What do you think? Say it. I know what you're thinking. The sex box, correct? If your life was a bingo card, you would have that biggest box in the middle would be your sex box. Right, guys? Or no one in here else thinks about sex but me all the time? Am I all alone here? Holy cow. Yeah, and guess what? You know how in the waffle, you're only one thing at a time? Man, if that's in the middle, you're jumping box to box to fly to that box, aren't you? Okay, because that's the box that you enjoy going to. Let's say you both have a lot of stress in your life. Let's say she does, and they talked about earlier that you need to encourage her to go to Christ first. Go to Christ first to solve and help her get through, because we're going to fall short. We're going to say the wrong thing. We're not going to hear her like she needs to be heard. Encourage her to go to Christ, because he's the one that's going to be able to complete her and get her through that situation. We're going to be able to listen a little bit, make her feel a little bit better about it, but he's the one that's actually going to get her through it. And again, you need to help her talk through things, like we talked about. She's going to get through this stress that she has by talking through it. But then again, you need her to allow you to go to the easy boxes when you're feeling stressed. You know, my wife, God bless her, lets me, hey, I see you're stressed, why don't you go golfing? You know, that didn't happen when we were first married. You know, we kind of had to, once we did this study, you know, why don't you go bowling? Why don't you call up one of your friends and go do this? You need to encourage one another. And take a step back. If it's too stressful, just deal with it some other time. All right, don't sit there and wallow in it. Otherwise, it's just going to get worse. And piled on, you're going to get more and more overwhelmed. Okay, so help her cope with the stress. But just know that stress affects her differently than you. Communicating with her and allowing her to communicate is going to help relieve that stress a lot quicker. Let's look. We're going to look at page 62. Okay, funny ways that men and women approach life. If Laura, Suzanne, Deborah, and Rose go out for lunch, they will call each other Laura, Suzanne, Deborah, and Rose. But if Mike, Charlie, and Bob and John go out, they will affectionately refer to each other as Fat Boy, Godzilla, Peanut Head, and Useless affectionately. Right? When you go out with your buddies, you got those names. Now, eating out. This is true. When the bill arrives, Mike and Charlie and John will each throw in a 20, you know, even though it's only for $22.50 because none of them have anything smaller. That's all I got, right? Okay, when the bill comes, what happens? Out comes them pocket calculators, correct? They are whipping that sucker out, and she is not getting more than 15%. No way, you know. The bathroom. A man has 6 items in his bathroom: a toothbrush, toothpaste, shaving cream, a razor, a bar of soap, and a towel from the Holiday Inn. The average number of items in a typical woman's bathroom is 337, and a man would not be able to identify most of them. Anybody feel? Yeah, and 3 girls on top of that. Yeah, you bet. Arguments, all right, different ways men and women approach life. A woman has the last word in any argument. Anything a man says after that is the beginning of a new argument. You ever feel like that sometimes? Yeah, I know. I sure do. Matter of fact, in the study guide here, a few more things we'll get since Steve's here so he can enjoy these. Men's advice for women. All right, men's advice for women. If we're in the backyard and the TV in the den is on, that doesn't mean we're not watching it. Okay? Only wearing your new lingerie once does not send the message that you need more. It tells us lingerie is a bad investment. Men's advice for women. Please don't drive when you're not driving. Can I get an amen on that one? Woo! Yeah, my wife loves to do that. When I'm turning the wheel and the car is nosing onto the off-ramp saying, this is our exit, is not strictly necessary. 2 hot dogs and a soda at a baseball game do, in fact, constitute going out to dinner. And no, you can't have the remote control. Advice for women. Now, on the love chapter, real quick, it talks about how romance to a woman is when you connect the things in her life together. When you help her connect the things in her life together, that's romantic to her. Now, to a guy, romance is the art of having a clear plan. Here's what we're going to do, and actually stick to that plan. We're going to go to the movie, and then go out to eat, and then have sex. You know, and stick to that plan. That's romantic to guys. You know, romance is actually the art of studying each other, so that way you can, you know, benefit each other, whether it's sexually or emotionally, whatever, to please one another, I guess is what I'm getting at. What are 5 dream dates you would like to go on if money were no object? So you'll fill that one out. And again, you can do this with your spouse. And next one is, what are 5 free things your spouse can do for you that make you feel loved? Buy you a tool, you know, whatever the case may be. Then there's a place for you to put what you think she would like to do on her dream dates. And then you can actually, if you make a photocopy, you can have her put what her dream dates are and vice versa and see if you guys are kind of tracking in the whole romance department. All right, anybody have any cool ideas of dates you've been on in the past so that everybody could write at the bottom of their handout there? I've done a scavenger hunt before for my wife. She loved it. Went all over town, had things put underneath park benches and things like that. Anybody else have a cool idea that we could share there? roller skating. There you go. Remember those junior high days and take her roller skating, you know, when you're married? You bet. What are the cool dates, creative dates have you come up with? You went to Antarctica? Woo! Yeah, I didn't. Oh, cool date. Now I'm tracking. Now I'm. Woo! A little slow here. Bear with me, people. It's hot in here. What other cool dates have you done?
I don't know if it's the event, but it's planning the entire date. So it's not. Where would you like to go to dinner? I don't care. But, getting the babysitter, planning the reservations, doing that.
Making her feel like a priority. You must have read the book, because that is exactly what they said in this chapter. Planning the whole date. She feels a priority to you when you're getting the babysitter. You already got food arranged. You already got this, that, or whatever. That is romantic to her. When you took some stress off of her, you know, and connected the things in her life together, where are the kids going to go? What are we going to do here? You did it for her. You solved that problem for her, and she enjoyed it that much more. That was a big thing that they said in here. Exactly.
Planning a date and then planning a back for her in case she doesn't have the first
one. Have you had that happen before? Yeah.
That helps, though, if you have a backup.
Sure. Hey, golfing 18, that's always going to be my backup.
Your job. You know,
Hey, I planned this first one. If you don't like it, let's go. What are you going to do? Wouldn't that be nice? So really, you know, reach out to her. Be there for her, you know, and plan the date. Let her know that she's a priority for you. All right, and real quick, two more things. This one is the bedroom stuff. I want to touch on this. Holy mackerel. Check, please. All right, this one actually is pretty cool. All right, this talks about men and women in the bedroom, okay? Whose hands? A basketball in my hand is worth $19. A basketball in Michael Jordan's hand is worth about $33 million. It depends on whose hands it's in. A tennis racket is useless in my hand. A tennis racket in Pete Sampras's hand is a Wimbledon championship. It depends on whose hands it's in. A rod in my hand will keep away wild animals. A rod in Moses' hand will part the mighty sea. It depends on whose hands it's in. A slingshot in my hand is a kid's toy. A slingshot in David's hand is a mighty weapon. It depends on whose hand it is in. Nails in my hand might produce a birdhouse. Nails in Jesus Christ's hands will produce salvation for the entire world. It depends on whose hand it's in. As you see now, it depends on whose hand it's in. So put your concerns, your worries, your fears, your hopes, your dreams, your families, and your relationships in God's hands, because it depends on whose hands it's in. The success of your sex life depends on whose hands you put it in. And I thought that was pretty cool. God meant sex to be beautiful between man and a woman, not to be dirty or anything like that. If you give it to Him and put it in His hands, it's going to be beautiful. It really is. If it's not all about you, it's about pleasing your spouse and you're doing that for each other, it's going to be amazing. It's going to be absolutely amazing. And here's one way that you can impress a woman. Well, actually, there's a bunch of different ways, but how to impress a woman. Compliment her, cuddle her, kiss her, caress her, love her, stroke her, tease her. If you want to write these down, I'm just kidding. Comfort her, protect her, hug her, hold her, spend money on her, dine her, buy things for her, listen to her, care for her, stand by her, support her, go to the ends of the earth for her. And you know how she can impress you? Show up naked. That's how you impress a man, right? The difference is between men and women. What she really means if she says, it's your decision. Okay, this is in the bedroom again. It's your decision. She means the correct decision should be obvious by now. If she says, you're so manly, she means you need a shave and you sweat a lot. If she says this kitchen is so inconvenient, she means I want a new house. If she says I heard a noise, she means I noticed you were almost asleep. If she says all we're going to buy is a soap dish, she means it goes without saying that we're stopping at the cosmetic department, the shoe department. I need to look at a few pocketbooks. Those pink sheets would look great on the bedroom. And did you bring your checkbook? Now, guys, on the other hand, what he really means if he says I'm hungry, he means I'm hungry. If he says I'm tired, he means what? If he says what's wrong, all right, he means, I don't see why you're making such a big deal out of this. The second time he says what's wrong, he means, what meaningless, self-inflicted psychological trauma are you going through now? Third time he says what's wrong, he means, I guess sex is out of the question. If he says I'm bored, he means, do you want to have sex? All right. If he says, let's talk, he means, I'm trying to impress you with showing that I'm a deep person, and then maybe you want to have sex with me. Okay. That's kind of how our thought process goes sometimes. Would you agree, guys? All right. And there's nothing wrong with that. Okay. Just some funny differences between men and women. And why it's great to be male facts. A 5-day trip requires only one suitcase as we wind up here. Why it's great to be male. We can go to the bathroom without a support group. Why it's great to be male. If someone forgets to invite us to something, they can still be our friend. Three pairs of shoes are more than enough, maybe too many. We can sit quietly and watch... Oh, this one's great. Why it's great to be a guy. Oh, praise the Lord. We can sit quietly and watch a game with a friend for hours without thinking, he must be mad at me. We can drop by and see a friend without having to bring a little gift. If another guy shows up at a party in the same outfit, we just might become lifelong friends. Here's a good one. Why it's great to be a guy. Our pals will never trap us with, so you notice anything different about me? Another reason why it's great to be a guy, we are totally unaware to see wrinkles in our clothes. And most importantly, the same hairstyle lasts for years, even decades. Why it's great to be a guy. Now, guys, like I said, this study has been a life-changing experience for my wife and I. It's called Men Are Like Waffles, Women Are Like Spaghetti. We didn't cover a bunch of chapters. We didn't cover achieving together, where you really reach out to make each other successful in whatever goals they are. You're asking your spouse, what pursuits do you have? How can I help you with them? And you're doing that for each other. We didn't focus on conflict. But I want to really key in on communication because it can help out all the different areas. But it talks about how to use conflict, you know, to benefit your marriage. The way that a wife conflicts and the way that the husband conflicts. And how to utilize that for the benefit of your marriage. That was a great chapter. But again, I didn't want to give you everything because I hope you go out and get this. I mean, I have nothing to do with this. It's people from San Diego, but it's changed a lot of people's marriage that we've given this book to for wedding gifts and stuff like that. It talks about being home together, whose responsibility is what, who does what, when, and where, and what the Bible says about it. Parenting together, how to understand your son, how to understand your daughter, and how to come together on your parenting, and how to meet each other's key needs. Now, we didn't talk a lot about Bible verses, but there's a study guide that goes with the Bible study itself, you guys, that actually has stuff that you do every day. There's 5 days of homework in here each week. And then it gives you things to talk about and write out. You know, a prayer to go through, a bunch of verses to look up. And then after the end of each chapter, you actually write a love note. Well, you journal each day, but you write a little love note to your spouse based on the chapter you just talked about and how you're going to meet her, where she's at in that chapter. And so it's kind of cool. So each week, my wife and I read the love letters to each other in communication, how I'm going to be a better communicator, how I'm going to try and be a better lover, be more romantic, and then vice versa. She's doing that for me. So a lot of good scripture in here about what God says about these different topics here. Does anyone have any quick questions about some of the fun differences? Hope you learned a little something about how men are like waffles, women are like spaghetti, how we process things differently, and understanding a little bit more about women. You know, maybe your parent, or maybe your mom or sister or wife or daughter, understanding why they have to get those words out. I mean, if you take them on that journey, blessed is you who does. Any questions?
Does a single guy still
want to
get married?
Say again? do you still want to get married?
I don't know.
No, you'll love it. There's actually a single men are like waffles, single women are like spaghetti. So there's a single version of this as well. But I would get the study guide too because that adds a lot of the meat and potatoes to the study itself. So why don't we go ahead and pray. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for a great day, Lord. We're able to come and encourage each other as men. We're able to lock arm in arm, God, and just say that we will be your light in this world of darkness. We will be the leaders that you've destined us to be in our homes, in our hometowns. And just God, just let us absorb all the information that we've gotten today and not feel like we've sucked on a fire hose, but just that we've got just the right information that you wanted us to have to really benefit the people around us. For God, we are committed to you. We love you. We praise and honor you, God. And again, thank you for Steve for putting this together for us. We're so thankful that we have an opportunity like this to come once a year and just be dangerous men. We love and praise you. Amen.